Welcome to the midweek Mission Ridge podcast known as Footnotes. Footnotes is here to give you some of the stuff that we didn't have time to cover in the sermon and encourage you to dig in deeper as you study the text. So let's dive in and check out what's in the footnotes. Welcome to another episode of Footnotes. We are joined today with Paul Patterson.
Hello.
Rob Croyle.
Hello.
And myself, Logan Daly. And we are about to tear apart Christmas.
We apologize in advance.
This is going to be so much fun.
It's going to be a good time. We promise. Hang with us.
To be clear, this is all Logan's idea.
It is all my idea. I love Christmas, but we definitely need to have a little fun with this and pull apart all of our favorite things and point out the inconsistencies in Netflix movies and all of those things that Paul does all the time.
Says the man wearing the Yoda Claus shirt.
Yep. I am wearing my Yoda Claus shirt for sure.
And you're the one that you have the Christmas kitty sweater that you wear almost every
Meowy day. Christmas.
Yeah.
Meowy Christmas.
So we're going to do this in two parts. We're going to do the Christmas story itself, and then we're going to look at some Christmas other things.
Yeah.
Right?
And there might be a moral at the end of the story.
Let's do this.
You just, spoiler alert.
I mean, it's a Christmas story. You know what's coming.
No, well, they may not.
I don't know. Now they don't know for
not
sure.
Not your typical...
It's
what's
us.
That, what's that holiday?
That one Old Testament reference?
Yeah, what's the Old Testament reference?
That's a bit of an inside Remez there. All right, so we're going to start off with this word in. When you read in Luke 1 and 2, when Mary and Joseph have to go to Bethlehem for the census, and they get to Bethlehem, and it says in most of our translations, actually I think in almost every translation, it says that Mary and Joseph that there was no room for them at the inn.
Mm.
And it's been translated this way for, a very long time. I'm pretty sure even the original King James Version translated it this way. And the unfortunate thing is that this is actually not what this word means at all. The Greek word is kataluma. And the word kataluma has this idea of like an inner room, a back room. It's part of a house, and it's used in multiple different ways. The upper room that Jesus and his disciples have their Last Supper in is called a kataluma. And so it's this idea of a set-aside room, kind of like, you can almost think of like a guest room in a house. A kataluma was a place that a newly married couple would be their dedicated room for the first year of their marriage. And so, Logan, when you get married, you and your wife would move into a kataluma in your father's house, in his bedov. And for the first year, that was your dedicated space, and that was your private space. And that's kind of the idea of this kataluma. Now, there is another word for a hotel or for an inn, and it's pandoxion. And Luke actually uses that word in the Good Samaritan story, when the Samaritan takes this Jew that was left for dead, and he takes him to Jericho, and he puts him up in an inn. Mm-hmm. And it's not kataluma there, it's the word pandoxion.
Pandoxion.
Pandoxion. So Luke is familiar with what word to use when if he's thinking of a hotel or an inn.
Sure.
And the other thing, too, the reason why this is not a hotel is because the city of Bethlehem is not a big city. By any means. It's not a city that's going to be able to have a hotel. I mean, they had hotels and inns in some type of fashion in this time, but it was usually in larger cities. So oftentimes when we tell this story, we think of Mary and Joseph, they have to travel, they come to Bethlehem, and they go to maybe like the one hotel that's available, and all their rooms are booked. So therefore, they have nowhere else to go. So they have to go to like a stable or something. Like
sure.
That. And that's just not the case. We read that Joseph, because of the census, has to go to the city of his birth. And so Joseph would have family here. And so what most likely happens is that Joseph and Mary go to Joseph's family to maybe his father's house or his grandfather's house or, you know, some relative's house. And they do not make room for them in the kataluma. And this raises a whole bunch of other inconsistencies in the story. So, and I kind of want to stitch this together. I want to talk about two more things and then stitch this together before we move on. And if you two want to jump in at any time. Mm-hmm. I know I'm just nerding out.
Oh, I'm totally okay with that right now. I'm enjoying it, actually.
Keep going.
We often have this assumption that Mary and Joseph are married at this time. Mm-hmm. Because in our mindset, you can get married. You do a little ceremony, you say your vows, you have your paper signed, you're done. That's not how Jews got married. It was a 7-day-long wedding feast. And during this wedding feast, you had to consummate the marriage. So you would have to have, you'd have to have sex. And sometimes you I know.
They did that?
They did that.
Dirty sinners.
Within the 7 days.
And sometimes you would even have a witness to the act.
That's disgusting.
It's an entirely different culture, right? I get that. If you didn't have a witness, you would have to bring out, the bloody rag.
That's just barbaric.
To prove that the wedding had been consummated.
Good now, thing Western culture never did that.
We're going to never mind. I was going, nope, that was so close. I almost crossed the line.
Pressing on.
Molly, aren't you proud? I restrained myself. What was I saying? Okay, so.
They were not married.
So what we read about.
And how do we know they're not married?
So the way we know they're not married is when Joseph. So we know Mary and Joseph are betrothed.
Yeah.
They're engaged, which in the Jewish mindset, that's legally binding. But they haven't had the wedding ceremony yet. They're not officially a married couple. And when Joseph learns that Mary's pregnant, he first decides he's going to put her out quietly so he doesn't make a big deal and shame her. But then the angel tells him, like, no, everything Mary said about this baby is true, and you need to marry her. And so Joseph decides that he will not touch her until after the baby is born. So in a Jewish mindset, that means their wedding could never be consummated until after the birth of Christ.
So they're not married at that point,
then? They're not married. So now imagine a Jewish couple who has not had their wedding feast, and they're going to travel to stay with distant relatives. And the girl's pregnant, and it's a small town, and everyone's talking. And so Joseph and Mary, they come to the house, this relative's house that they want to stay in, and the relatives say, you cannot stay in the Cataluma, this room that was often reserved for outside guests or, for newly married couples. You could quickly start stitching together what's going on here. The family is shaming them. And so instead of, not only that, they don't even let the couple stay in the common living area.
Yeah.
So we often, and this kind of gets into the third misconception where we think of Mary and Joseph having Jesus be born in like a stable.
Sure.
And it's kind of half true, half not. They had stables, but almost every household had a stable built into the house because every family had some type of animal. Whether it was a goat or sheep, a goat for its milk, a sheep for its wool. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you would have, like an ox or a cow. And once again, you'd usually use those for milk. And occasionally you would try to breed them, try to sell. What's a baby cow called?
Calf.
Calf. Thank you. Wow.
And sometimes you'd have a steak.
And, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm just.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You would save these animals for special occasions.
Sure.
Like a wedding. And so every household had these, and you would keep them in your house. Like it would be kind of, you can think of like a courtyard, or sometimes it would be in the house, but kind of a lower level. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons you would have them is because they don't have the heating systems we have today. So you had extra body heat. It was taking up air, so you had less air that you had to heat up.
Sure.
And it also protected your animals from both predators as well as thieves. And so what we read is that they have Jesus is born in a manger. And so they're still part of this household, but they're kind of like shunned to the corner and they have to be with the animals. And then and this other idea of a manger, we often think of like, I don't know, I'm making hand motions here.
It's the cross. Well. It's the stereotypical X design. Yeah. Two X's with a trough laid across them, yeah, held there with some nice golden hay, and Jesus is all wrapped up inside of it, and there's straw on the floor, and everything's really clean, and the sheep are all behaving themselves, and the cows aren't licking the baby, even though he's where their food would be. Yeah, this is the manger scene that we think of.
So just talk about the wooden manger that we often think of. Jews did not have a lot of wood. You could look at pictures of Israel, and they're not known for big trees and lumber.
Sure. They build everything out of rock.
They build everything out of rock. In fact, Joseph was a tecton, and we often think of Joseph being a carpenter. But actually a tecton in the Jewish context here was probably a stonemason, which means, side note, that Joseph probably helped build some of the like the Greek cities and amphitheaters and many coliseums and theaters and stuff.
So Jesus would have grown up possibly helping his dad, stepdad.
Which would make sense because Jesus quotes Greek plays. Not often. I think there's like three places he does it. But
yeah, if you pull up the satellite view of Google Maps, you don't see trees in Bethlehem.
No, or anywhere around there. Really.
It's dirt.
Yeah,
sure.
It's dirt and rocks.
It's rocks on top of rocks.
With some dirt. Yeah. So they built everything out of rocks. So honestly, the manger would have been more like a stone block with a hole carved into it, and this is what Jesus is probably sleeping in. Interesting note. There was a class I was listening to that this professor he was talking about this word kataluma, and this word how we translate it in, and how all the translators know that this is not the right word. And so he was talking with, I'm not going to say the translation, but he was talking with one of these big name main translations. And he asked this guy who worked on the translation team why they translated the word kataluma as in. And he said it's just because it's been translated this way forever and it's tradition now. So I found that interesting.
Oh, so traditions can get in the way sometimes.
Anyway.
Oh, man.
So
pressing on.
So yeah, those are just kind of three misconceptions combined into one right there. The idea of kataluma and in Mary and Joseph are probably not married at this point. And a manger is not a nice little wooden X frame type of thing with a trough.
It's probably a rock that has been hollowed out.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, basin.
I think in many ways that's probably more comfortable to sleep in because you have that V.
Oh, maybe.
But I don't know.
Depends on
side
how much
note,
hay they have
this
in
is
there.
Not on our notes for today. Side note, you could tell me the song, but the whole idea of baby Jesus, no crying.
Oh, it's away in a manger.
Yeah, the idea of Jesus
little
not
Lord
crying.
Jesus, no crying he makes.
That's a load of baloney.
Oh, but he was the son of God. He was the perfect little angel child. He never cried.
He cried as an adult.
Nah, never. He only wept that one time.
Oh, okay. Sure.
One tear, one time.
Sure.
That was our Jesus. I don't think so.
Anyway, there's kind of those three combined. Now, one other one kind of related to this whole trip that they had to take. We often, like on our Christmas cards or our nativity scenes, we have Mary on a donkey.
Yeah.
I want to point out that's actually mentioned nowhere in the text. There is no record of Mary being on a donkey. I know. Could she have been on a donkey? Sure.
Could have been
way more possible than the wooden manger.
It definitely possible. I did point out earlier when we were talking that donkeys were often used as pack animals, not necessarily travel, like for personal travel. Like,
sure,
you would load up your luggage, you'd load up your luggage, your supplies, your food, your water, like all the things you had to take with you because they don't have convenience stores.
Sure,
possibly a tent or something to sleep in, bed mats, whatever like that. And then you'd load that up on your donkey, and then you would walk by foot leading your donkey. Now, if depending on how pregnant Mary is, maybe
Joseph, she counts as one of those things that needs to be carried.
Maybe. And that's that is a possibility. We don't know. I just want to ruin Christmas as much as possible. So, but that leads into kind of a side point. We often think, when we think of this story, we think Joseph and Mary, they get to Bethlehem, they, get to their stable. Mm-hmm. And then they have a baby.
Like, sure.
It's almost like a 24-hour period in our brains. We have no idea how long
could have been there for
is.
A couple weeks.
Or even longer, because actually the text says, and when it came time for the child to be born, like, we don't know when that was.
Sure. And the census could have taken a while.
It could have. It definitely could have. And you know, they didn't have a car. You could just jump in and drive, you know, 20, 40, 60 miles away and make a day trip out of it. Like, sure. It's, you have to travel. You probably gonna have to replenish your supplies. Joseph may have had to find, you know, some side work to be able to buy these supplies, you know, things like that. But just a little side note. Now, the other big glaring thing that I think we often get wrong in the way we view the Christmas stories is the wise men. Mm. So when we talk about the wise men, how many are there?
There's always three.
There's always three.
Because they brought three gifts, and each one brought a gift.
Yep.
And we were all different sizes, but, you know, generally about the same height. And they're all taller, and they all got that Eastern wear. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And when do they show up?
The night of.
The night of.
And for sure, yes, they're not late.
And we also have a Christmas carol called...
We Three Kings.
Yeah, so...
Of Orient are. Bearing gifts.
By the way...
They traversed afar.
By the way, growing up, of Orient afar, I combined Orient and afar together, and I thought it was like a location.
It's not... It's
We
not
Three Kings
Orient.
Of Orient afar.
It's not Orient afar. Of that, Orient are.
Oh, yeah, so
they're
I'm
of
still
the Orient.
Anyway.
This is why you don't do worship.
Nope.
Zing.
And that's why I don't do worship.
Pan shot.
Anyway. So yeah, we think there's three. We think they show up the night of, and sometimes we think that they're royalty.
Sure.
So let's start with the number of wise men. There's no mention of how many there are.
But there was three gifts.
There were three gifts, three kinds of gifts. They brought gifts of incense, frankincense, and myrrh.
Well, obviously, they could only handle one gift apiece.
And honestly, it could have been all the wise men brought a single gift. Like, here's our collection, our cacophony of gifts.
They were socialist.
Do you think they knew the word cacophony?
Probably not.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm. But they brought their collection of gifts, which would actually make sense if they are, if this is, what is it called? Like when you send, if they're
emissaries,
like a delegation.
Sure.
Like the gifts are not individual
actually from,
gifts.
Yeah, they're from their groups.
Sure.
Sure. Okay.
They're paying tribute.
All right. I'll concede that. That doesn't make for a good song though.
I'm sorry. Now, do they show up the night of? We don't know exactly when they show up.
I had originally heard they showed up maybe even 3 years later.
Up to 2 years.
Okay, 2 years.
And the reason that we know it's up to 2 years is because when Herod realizes they escaped, he kills all the boys in Bethlehem 2 and under.
Oh.
So if it was a newly born child, why 2 and under?
Sure.
And so...
he was an overachiever.
He was just going the extra mile.
He could have been going the extra mile. Like I said, we don't know exactly when they showed up, but it probably was not the night of. It could have been significantly later.
That doesn't make it cinematic then. So you can't ruin my Christmas with that.
I'm sorry. I just did. And I actually need to look up one other thing real quick. But while I do that,
so for the nativity scene, you need to actually set the wise men up like in a different room.
2 years
just
later,
chilling off by themselves.
There you go. Yeah.
they're chilling in the kitchen.
They're traveling.
Whichever room is to the east in your house.
As far east as possible.
As far east as possible.
Because it's going to take some time.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, they're probably coming from the area of Babylon, by the way.
Oh.
That's actually probably one of the main theories, and I think it's one of the best theories.
That kind
of
makes sense.
Because there's a collection of Jews that lived in the Babylon area.
Okay.
Ooh, they would be wise. Uh-huh. Mm. Looking for a Messiah.
They're very Daniel-esque figures.
Hmm.
And that's actually one of the theories is that Babylon was known for astrology. And in fact, the area that they come from, like they're known for their study of the stars.
Sure.
And the word here, like, they're not kings. They're the wise men is magi. It's actually the same word we get magicians from. Now, don't get all freaked out by the hocus pocus. Like magicians then could have been anything that deals with metaphysics.
You're a wizard, magi.
Well, I mean, if you study the stars, if you study chemicals and like
science.
Science, yeah. Like for them, like our science today would be pure magic.
Oh, yes.
So this is, and so over time, this idea of magi and magic just kind of became elevated and to the point that we think of Harry Potter now.
Mm.
These were just magi. It's obviously they were familiar with astrology. This is probably what they did. They potentially have some type of relationship with Daniel and the Jews there. Maybe they are Jewish. Maybe they're
part Jewish.
Part Jewish.
Like Goldie Hawn.
Yeah. Like, we don't fully know, but they're not kings by any means. So there's not three. They're not kings. And they probably did not show up the night of.
Hmm.
And one last thing I just wanted to look up to confirm.
You're just ruining all of my childhood Christmas stories.
Yes, you should buy me a Christmas present. I'll confirm it.
Is that what you're looking up?
No, I'm just... Okay.
That's what a good boss would do.
Going back to how we're talking about how... Gosh, guys. I'm trying to stay on track here. Going back to this idea that this was not a day trip, if this was significantly later and Jesus was one and a half, it meant sure. that Joseph and Mary stayed there for a while. Like a long while.
Or the star just got them in the right area and then they found him.
What?
Herod sent the wise men to Bethlehem.
To Bethlehem.
And they found him.
So they
must
have stayed in town then.
Yeah, they stayed in town for a while.
All right.
Yeah.
They set up shop.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, travel in that region. I mean, you're talking, that's a long walk.
Yeah.
Hmm.
They may or may not have had camels. We don't know. Camels was mostly an Egypt thing. Yeah, they were traded to other nations, but Babylon did not have camels. They were not native there. So there's another fun thing.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense, actually, when you think about it, because the camels would have had to have, they would have been wise men from the south and the west.
Yeah.
We just screwed that one up for years.
Uh-huh.
But they look so good on camels.
I'm sure they do.
Oh, man.
Anyway. So yeah,
just
there's
the Grinch over here, just ruining everything.
Yeah, you were excited about this podcast.
I'm still excited.
So there's just another thing, like, and these are just a few. Like, oftentimes when we think of this story, over time, there's a story that has been laid on top of the story, and you know, some of these things aren't that big of a deal. I think the Cataluma is a big deal because it changes
how you view them.
Yeah, and also you understand a bit more of what they had to go through.
Sure.
The idea of Mary and Joseph not being married officially yet, I think, is kind of a big deal too. But, it's just good to point this out. Now, Logan, I think the part that you're really excited about is talking about these Christmas traditions that we have.
Well, we kind of got into it here of we have traditions that have clouded the story, if you will.
Sure.
And these are just within, you know... These are new, relatively new, you know, with the advent of videos and telling the story that way and imagery that has polluted our Christmas story.
So not just Christmas, though. Like, have you ever wondered on Halloween night when you're seeing all these hundreds of kids who are in their elaborate costumes, walk around with their pumpkin buckets going from house to house, and every house has candy because they went out and pre-bought candy because they know there's kids. How did that take form? Like,
I just figured Nestle... decided that they wanted to, you know, have a holiday around candy.
In my mind, like the development of holidays is fascinating to me, because how do you get everyone on the same page? I should study. I probably will do that now. I'll probably binge study and how, like, the history of Halloween and how it was developed. But anyway,
we just lost our senior pastor for the next 30
I'm
years.
I'm down the rabbit hole.
Anyway, but you want to talk about some of these other traditions that over time have kind of taken on a life of their own.
Sure.
So let's start with the big one. Let's talk about the Christmas tree.
That's now,
the big one?
Well, I mean, Christmas trees are kind of a big deal, but I would say even just Christmas itself with the debacle of the Xmas, but we'll get to that next.
Okay.
I would call that one the big one. But we've got Christmas trees. Now, Christmas trees are... actually interesting when you start researching where they came from. I fell down the Wikipedia rabbit hole yesterday, or the day before, a couple days ago. And it's like all over the place. Cause you've got people that think that they came from Asherah poles,
which was a pagan pole in the Old Testament used to worship a god,
a fertility god,
which was probably,
Asherah and Baal.
Well, if you have children listening, cover their ears. The Asherah pole probably was flaccid shaped.
Mm. There you go.
Hopefully they don't. Hopefully your kids, if they heard that, don't know what that word is.
Well, they can go look it up.
Mommy, what does flaccid mean?
I didn't hear it.
All right, Rob covered his ears.
Now you can unplug your ears. All right. yeah. So Christmas tree could have been connected to that.
Could have been related to that. Also,
I don't think it is.
I think that that's a bit of an out there theory. Yeah. So maybe Christmas is safe from that, but there definitely was a lot of evergreen worship, mm-hmm. And they used evergreens in many different festivals, and
especially around the winter solstice
and different cultures. Mm-hmm. Okay, because you had Norse cultures, you had Germanic cultures, you had the Roman cultures. All of these all used evergreens in different ways, shapes, and forms. You had, for example, like wreaths would make an appearance because you'd use these in a lot of Roman festivals. You would give wreaths made of laurels or ivy or different things like that, depending on which god you were celebrating. You would also use the evergreen to ward off spirits from some accounts, which is kind of funny in my mind. You had druids like to use mistletoe. There's all of these different plants that we associate with Christmas, and Christmas decorations all come from these different pagan holidays that we ghostbustered up. And we're like, oh, we'll have a little bit of that, and oh, we'll have a little bit of that, and we can't get you to stop celebrating that one, so we're just gonna engulf it.
Like the Yule log was also
sure. The Yule log, that's a fun one. So, not for sure, but definitely could have been related to Celtic human sacrifices. So because you would do burnt human offerings apparently. And it could have been related to that one. But even if that's not necessarily true, you would take the Yule log back in the heyday and you would burn the Yule log. You would keep a piece of that for next year to light up the next Yule log. If you do a Yule log, this is how
this
you
is
do
like
it.
Like friendship bread.
Yes. And you would take this piece from the previous year, and that was going to give you good luck and ward off evil spirits and all of this stuff during the year. Up until the next time when you use that to start the next fire. Hmm. Oh, yeah. Hmm. Like, there's pagan all over this stuff.
And actually, a lot of these things, not all of them, but a lot of these things also center around the winter solstice.
Yep.
Which was, like, in Greco-Roman time.
Saturnalia.
Yep, Saturnalia was the worship of that god. Mm-hmm. And in every culture at this time, winter solstice... summer solstice, these were incredibly important days, and you would always tie these to some type of pagan worship.
And you would sing carols at all four of these.
Sure.
But we only kept the winter ones.
I'm gonna give that one a pass because all of human culture, whether it was Christian, Jewish, or pagan,
or
secular, we value
we're supposed
songs.
To sing? Okay, yeah, fine. We'll keep singing, okay. I guess.
So the date of December 25th is interesting. And the main theory of how we arrived at this was not that we think Jesus was born around this time.
Yeah.
Which the Catholic Church decided to have it on this time to replace Saturnalia, mm-hmm. the worship of this god. So they put it around the winter solstice. And this is actually a common thing the Catholic Church did. They would find these pagan holidays, and then they would try to Christianize them.
Yep. Yeah, because you had the Saturnalia was December 17th. And later expanded with festivities through December 24th,
mm-hmm. which was common.
I mean, 23rd, depending
on a lot of these pagan
the
festivals
researcher.
Were not a single day thing.
Sure.
Because one, if you're going to travel for a festival, it better not be like a 2-hour party.
Oh, sure. No, it was weeks.
Yeah.
Or days.
Usually just days, like a week. But yeah, like, and so, I mean, a lot of almost all the Jewish holidays are week long.
Yeah.
I think with the exception of Passover is a single day. And then it's followed by the Festival of Bread immediately, which is
So there's a couple that are like crammed together there, right?
Oh yeah, Yom Kippur is a single day, but mm-hmm. it's crammed together, it's sandwiched between two other long festivals. But yeah, like anyway, so this is what the Catholic Church did. They Christianized a lot of these things, and I'm not actually criticizing for them doing that.
It's kind of shrewd.
It is. It's both shrewd, but you also find God kind of doing this with things like.
Meet the people where they're at.
Sure. Like the tabernacle was not the first temple. Mm. There were pagan temples that existed for thousands of years before God told his people to build the tabernacle, a mobile temple. He does this with, other things. And there's actually a phrase some theologians use called, I'm going to butcher it now, but they plundering the Egyptians.
Mm.
And there's actually a second part to that. I can't remember, but it's this idea of taking these pagan things and holifying them. And there's actually some precedents for that. So, but yeah, December 25th is by no means, it's not Jesus's birthday.
Sure.
In fact, it's most likely around September. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to get into that, how that theory comes about, but it relates to John the Baptist's dad when he was working at the temple. He was part of a clan, and they worked at a specific time during the year for a few weeks. And so I guess I am getting into it.
I was going to say, and we just got into it.
So the angel tells Zechariah that him and his wife are going to have a baby.
Sure.
But he's not home. He's working at the temple. So you assume when he gets back, him and his wife make a baby. And so,
Wow.
Why did we plant a church? Anyway, so you can actually kind of, we know when this family worked at the temple, and we can extrapolate when, we know that Elizabeth is 6 months pregnant when Mary comes to her.
Sure.
And Mary, we know Mary goes to Elizabeth right away, right after the angel shows up, because it says she went with haste.
Mm.
And so we know about when that happens, which puts the birth of Christ around September, which, by the way, if I count backwards right, means he's almost conceived around December 25th, actually, so mid-December sometime, if he's carried to full term. Just funny
thing. We'd call that misconception then.
Ah.
Oh, that was bad.
Anyway. So, so there's just some of those things. Now, let's talk about Xmas.
Mm.
Because I just read an article yesterday that was just posted yesterday.
Oh, no.
By, I won't say he's a famous Christian writer, but he probably has more people reading his blog than has more people reading his blog than we have at our church. How about that?
Oh no.
He's pretty well known, relatively within the Christian blogging world. But he talked about how Xmas is a complete attempt to remove Jesus from Christmas, and how secular pagan society has been trying to do this for years. And so instead of having Christmas, they want to write Xmas. Can I just say,
that's wrong.
Xmas is just easier to write when you're trying to write on a whiteboard.
Okay, there is that.
If I'm typing, if I'm actually like making notes or something, I'll do Christmas. But on the whiteboard right now is Xmas, because it's easier, quicker to write. And you can easily make a case that X stands for Christ, because in the Greek, the first letter of Christ is our letter X.
Mm-hmm. This was shorthand.
Yeah.
This was the low born. You're not necessarily, or you're trying to be secretive about it. That's what I had originally heard the story was, that this was the secret shorthand version, that X stood for Christ, and you would make that symbol.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And so when you write Xmas, it literally means Christmas.
And it has a 600-year history.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not the evil liberals trying to take away our Christmas.
Absolutely. In fact, some of the earliest Christian graffiti we find, they use the letter X.
Sure.
And the letter Rho for Christ Savior or something like that. I'm actually forgetting exactly what it was now, but we find it all over the place. We find graffiti of menorahs. Not menorahs. Is that the candle?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I got it right.
It's the Hanukkah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of menorahs with the X symbol, because they were Jewish Christians.
Sure.
Like, we find that all over the place. Early Christians used symbology and short code and signs all the time, like the ichthus, the Jesus fish. You know,
sure.
You see in the back of cars, and then you see the Darwins, and then you see the Christian ones eating the Darwin fishes. And
I'm waiting for the next iteration of that.
Yeah, the science one eating the Jesus fish that's eating the Darwin fish or something?
I don't know. We got to come up with the next one.
Okay.
Because it's just going to be funny.
It's going
to take fish with feet is actually kind of cute.
So the ichthus was an early Christian symbol. And the myth goes that you would draw half of the fish if you were meeting someone, like maybe casually in the sand or something. And if they were also a believer, they would finish the fish and you knew that you were safe.
Mm.
And ichthus was an acronym for Jesus Christ, Son of God, Savior. And the middle, that second letter, Christ, is the X. And so anyway, I just wanted to
just pull that one down.
Let's sure everyone that's listening to this, like,
Let's just fix that.
I'm sure most people don't realize that this is actually a controversy in the Christian world, but
I don't know. We're distracted by the Starbucks cups.
Actually,
oh, yeah.
So I was typing a message to someone the other day, and I wasn't sure if it would be offensive to them to write Xmas, and so I didn't. You know, just not even to get into the argument, you know, or in the conversation.
Sure.
And so it is one of those things that, you know, like I've seen it as I don't have an issue with it. I
sure.
understand why I don't have an issue with it. But I also understand that other people may have an issue with it, and that's from a point of maybe misinformation.
Sure.
But it's still something that we deal with in our culture.
Yeah. Well, and in my mind, like let's say you have a relative and you just know that this, you know, she just harps hard on, she's just offended easily by Xmas. You should not write her a Christmas card and use Xmas and Merry Xmas. Like, you shouldn't do that. It's not
worth
it.
Are we sure?
Yes. Yes, Logan, don't do it. Hmm. He has that look.
That sounds like something I would do.
So, I mean, this touches on other things, too, that we get hypersensitive about. Like, was it 2 years ago with the whole Starbucks cup?
Yeah. Oh.
No nativity in it, and they're like, oh.
Everybody lost their minds. Yeah. Or we get really mad about Happy Holidays.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of Merry Christmas. But, like, there's also Hanukkah going on, and really, what's wrong with Happy Holidays?
And even New Year's.
Like, is there a problem with wishing somebody that you wish that their holidays are happy?
Well, and there's only a month, a little more than a month between Thanksgiving and New Year's, and
sure.
you have three major holidays.
This is why I combine them all.
Yeah.
Christgiving-mas.
And that's why he plays Christmas music.
All through November and December, baby.
No. You can start, you can do whatever you want on your own. Christmas music at Mission Tradition does not start until after Thanksgiving.
Until 2019.
Started. Anyway, but no, like we get hypersensitive about things like Starbucks.
Sure.
I think 1 year there was, I want to say Target. I'm probably wrong on that, so don't quote me on this. But I think Target didn't sell, like none of their Christmas cards had a nativity on it.
And somebody decided that this was an attack upon, this was an affront to us.
Yeah, we all got up in arms on it. And I think that shows how far we've changed from the first century church.
Sure.
Like, can you imagine how excited Christians would be if they walked into the local market and some official big box store was selling an actual Christmas card? Can you imagine actually, they didn't celebrate birthdays. They actually didn't. The birth of Christ really wasn't celebrated until around 400 AD in an official capacity. They thought it was more important to celebrate his death. But anyway, that's actually another reason that the Catholic Church put his birth in December, because it worked really well with the church calendar.
Hmm. And so it just worked well there. It was also the first day that it looked like the, because they did Saturnalia, the whole like Yule festival was where the sun looks like it doesn't move for 3 days. And then on the 25th, it jumps.
Yeah. Well, and this is why the winter solstice, it's the shortest day.
Yep.
And also marks the moment when things start to change.
Yep.
Like you're now coming out of this deep,
out
dark
of the
cold.
Darkness.
Yeah. Which is why they brought trees into their house or hung up wreaths, because you're trying to,
especially Northern Europe.
Yeah, you're celebrating the coming of spring and the coming of life again.
Sure.
Anyway, so that's just a side note. But no, we get caught up on silly things as Christians, and I think that shows how spoiled we are, how we've missed the point.
I wonder if there's a fear. I mean, we have really not faced any true persecution in the U.S. It's one of those things that we know Jesus says that persecution is something that we'll face. And so there almost seems to be this rejection of any form, shape, anything that even seems to feel to come close. And yet our Christian brothers and sisters around the world would probably roll their eyes at what we would consider persecution in the U.S.
Starbucks is persecuting us.
Yeah, the Christians in China would be...
Or North Korea.
Or North Korea would be probably laughing at us. Like, wait, you're mad about what?
Yeah.
You're mad about what?
So I have two thoughts. One from just say an exegesis standpoint. There's two levels of taking a scripture, like when Jesus says something. You can take it in the immediate context. He's talking to a specific group of people during a specific time. So he's telling his disciples, you will be persecuted, and we knew that they were.
Sure.
You could also take it in the extended context where he's projecting this out for all believers in general.
Right.
So just a random exegesis, hermeneutical thought.
Merry Christmas. It's a gift. Yeah. It's a gift you were not expecting.
I completely agree with you. Like, what we consider persecution in America is not persecution. It's a sign of how spoiled we were and how we were so used to controlling the system and culture and politics.
Sure.
And I think, I think that talks a lot about that comment. I think works really well with what we talked about Sunday. But before we get too far, you want to talk about Santa?
Oh yeah, Santa's another one because we.
So let's be clear. Saint Nick was a real person.
Was a real person. And I'm totally fine with Santa Claus. Like, I grew up doing Santa Claus with my family, and I probably found out later than most kids that Santa wasn't real, probably because I knew, but I just didn't want to acknowledge it because I might end up, missing out on some free stuff. But Santa Claus was not just Saint Nick, because we have this image of Father Christmas, and it actually originated with Odin.
So I think this is another example of
the Catholic Church taking things in, and
so why do you think it originates from Odin?
So you've got the Father Christmas. This Odin used to fly around, giving gifts
Rob's
to people.
Rob's leaving, by the way. Bye, Rob.
He's got to go get his hairs cut.
Hairs will be cut. Merry Christmas. Love you guys.
So that was just me and Logan. You want to mute his mic?
Yes, I will.
So Father Christmas.
Father Christmas. So Father Christmas, this image of him wearing a big robe, this is the Odin image, a big fluffy beard, and he would fly around giving gifts
to
people.
And does he live in the north?
He lived in the north. And, oh yeah, he flew around on his eight-legged horse. And how many reindeer does Santa run around with? Oh, his sleigh is pulled by eight tiny reindeer. Now, some of this you're reaching a little bit, but sure. It's really not hard to imagine that these pagans that convert, they bring in their little bits and pieces of whatever they came in with, mm-hmm. and their Odin worship and their Saturnalia and their Yule festival and all of this other stuff, and you start to get these little bits and pieces of this. Well, and because it happened so long ago, we adopted it as our own, and it's fine, and this is part of the story, right? Mm-hmm. And we're okay with it because it was a long time ago, and the time has kind of molded this over. But I know, like, we were talking about during the sermon this week, because we're talking about the Advent, the week of love, mm-hmm. And we're talking about having love for people and grace for people. And how are we okay accepting these little, you know, inconsistencies in the story or the inconsistencies with our weird traditions, whether it be a Yule log and maybe it came from a bad past or whatever, mm-hmm. but, and we're okay with the inconsistencies here, but we're not okay.
Yeah. I had someone tell me, and it was last year during Christmas, and I think it was a song that came up, and I corrected some historical
sure.
flaw in it. And this person like snapped at me. And actually I wasn't even talking to him. I was talking to someone else and he was next to me and he just snapped at me. Sure. And I just have to ruin everything for everyone. I'm like,
I get protective over him.
I was just making a comment like, oh, by the way, which I you know, my wife will attest to the fact I do this. Now I want to be clear. If you do Santa in your family, you're not a dirty sinner.
No, you're totally fine.
Okay. With that said, let me take even what you just said about two comments. First off, anyone that has studied mythology mm-hmm. and the development of legends through sure. our culture, we know that mythology and legends take on different shapes and forms as time and culture changes. As that story is told over and over again, and as that story is passed from people group to people group, mm-hmm. it takes on different elements. Some elements are lost and some elements are grafted in to it. Now, in our culture, in the last 200-300 years, think how much technology and globalization has changed everything.
Sure.
And so you get this, you get a story that originates possibly with Odin, and then you have, but then you have this Christian culture, and then you have a guy named Saint Nick. mm-hmm. and it kind of combines into one. Now, you can study even the history of Santa Claus, and even just over the last 7,500 years, and see how dramatically even just that our story has changed.
Oh, sure.
And so, like, these things take on, they change over time, but they always have some original starting point, if not multiple original starting points.
Sure.
Now, I want to take what you said and even escalate it more about how we are willing to not just put up with inconsistencies because we like them and we like the tradition, but think about how we treat Santa today. Is he just a figure that delivers presents, or is he more of a demigod? And that's a bit of a leading question, but...
Oh, no, we totally treat him like a demigod.
You better not pout. You better not cry.
You better not shout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. Yeah.
He sees you when you're sleeping.
He knows when you're awake.
He knows if you've been bad or good.
So you better be good, for goodness sake.
Like, oh, what about the Elf on the Shelf?
Oh, dude, I love Elf on the Shelf. We didn't grow up doing this, and I didn't know about it until a couple years ago when I started seeing some of my friends that were having kids, mm-hmm. and they started posting pictures of, like, doing the Elf on it. I'm like, what the heck is an Elf on a Shelf? What is this thing? So I looked it up. I'm like, this is brilliant.
Well, so on one side, it's kind of comical. Like, I've seen some really funny pictures of Elf on the Shelf stuff. Like,
sure.
It's kind of
the idea that this elf is constantly watching you to make sure that you're good during the month of Christmas.
That's creepy.
No, that's brilliant. That's genius.
This is why Logan does not have kids.
My parents, we would have been so much better behaved.
Anyway, but no, we have, like, Santa Claus has almost turned into, let me ask you this. You grew up doing Santa?
Yeah. Yeah.
And, if your parents are listening to this, this is not a reprimand on them at all, but let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Did you, during Christmas season, did you think more about Santa or Jesus?
Like,
where was your emotional energy?
Oh, man.
Okay, you're struggling to at least answer the question.
Yeah, I don't know if it was probably not super split, but it probably wasn't.
At a minimum, Santa's taking some attention.
Oh, yeah, sure. There's definitely some attention there for sure. Yeah,
okay.
But I mean, we'd always do we're doing the Advent candles and we're doing the story and all that stuff all the time too. So like it's all in.
You
there.
Grew up kind of you went to like a Reformed church, which
that was when I was older, teenage.
Oh, okay.
So I grew up. I would have been Methodist.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
so
we're Methodist at this point.
So you're gonna have some family traditions. That,
yeah, yeah. There's. Okay. I mean,
did you have an Advent like candle on your table?
Oh yeah, yeah. We do that every year.
Okay.
Still.
Now most families don't do that.
Sure.
Like my family, you know, we don't do Santa, and we're very careful about instructing our kids not to ruin it for other kids. Just so you know, I know that's gonna fail one day, but anyway. But no, we have like on our wall, we have this little fabric nativity scene, I guess you could say.
Okay.
And leading up to Christmas, every day a kid takes out one of the characters, or like maybe it's the star or a camel.
Sure.
Speaking of putting up with inconsistencies, and they get to hang it wherever they want to on this
little angel.
Thing. Yeah. Our kids get to pick out a Christmas book every night. And sometimes it's just a cute little Christmas book.
The Grinch.
We actually don't have that one.
What?
Well, we probably have it. I don't ever remember seeing it. Anyway, but we actually don't have any Santa books. Not that I can think of. That's in our Christmas book selection. Hmm. But just like those, and then we read the Bible, and like our kids, all I'm trying to say, if you do Santa, that's cool. Do it. Have fun. The temptation is that Santa becomes an object that is worshipped.
Sure.
And that becomes idolatry. And that's, so with all that said, the reason that we're trying to ruin Christmas today on this podcast is we wanted to show how the traditions of man develop over time and sometimes distract us from the story. Now, those traditions aren't necessarily bad in and of themselves, but when we sacrifice God's tradition, God's mission, for the sake mm-hmm. of those things, that's when it becomes an issue. And when we, and so often, and I'll use an I statement here, but it's all of us, I sacrifice other people because of the smallest inconsistencies, the smallest flaws that they have,
sure.
while ignoring all the flaws I have because they're convenient for me. Mm-hmm. And this, we wanted to use Christmas as an example of how we do this. Yeah.
Because it's a big old mess of, we look over little things, you know, mm-hmm. every time a bell rings, that's the angel getting their wings. Like, what? No, that's not even remotely biblically okay.
Yeah.
You know, but we're going to pick at a Starbucks cup. Yeah. But we're okay with Miracle on 34th Street.
Yep.
But we're okay. Like, so we've got this, it's a cacophony. Elf. That's the word
Elf's
for today.
A great movie.
Elf's a great movie.
We watch it every year.
But, like, really, what? Mm-hmm. We're okay with this?
Yep. And I think we should be okay with these things.
I would agree. But if we're going to be okay with these sort of things, then we probably also should extend a little bit of grace, a little bit of compassion, the benefit of the doubt to
other people for their inconsistencies and flaws.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, what we, this is a classic example of a blind spot.
Sure.
Or as Jesus said, you know, we see the speck in someone else's eye and ignore the plank that's in our own.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have to be a people of grace and understanding, not approval, but understanding and grace and being okay with people being the way they are.
Sure.
They're going to be flawed. They're going to be imperfect, and we're flawed and we're imperfect, and we don't realize how imperfect we are. So yeah, that's kind of what we wanted to do with today's podcast. So
hopefully you found it enjoyable.
Or if you're like my wife, I'm just ruining everything for her. Sorry, Molly.
I really wish we could have got her in on this one.
Oh, she would have been squirming.
It would have been so much more fun.
Yeah. Not the first part. She would have been fine with the first part, but
yeah, yeah.
My wife loves festivities, and she loves the lights, and she loves going out to cut down a Christmas tree because she drags you along every year.
Sure. I actually enjoy it. In 2 years, she has taught me to enjoy that festival of chopping down a poor innocent tree so that it can be slowly destroyed
and killed
through lack of water and then eventually burned.
Anyway.
Merry Christmas.
So that's what we have for this week of footnotes. I do want to say that we are not going to have footnotes for 2 weeks.
Yeah, we won't have one over the New Year's. The sermon there where you're just talking about goals and hashtag goals for hashtag gains. He doesn't actually want to call it that, but that's the best name ever.
We are not calling it that.
I'm calling it that.
No, it's going to kind of be like a review of where we are, where we're at, and where we want to go.
Yeah,
and so it's a pretty important Sunday to be at if you're in the area.
Yeah, but that doesn't really necessarily a footnotey sort of sermon.
The other thing, too, is just calendar-wise, you're traveling.
You're traveling.
I'm traveling the first week of January.
So it'll just work out nicely. Rob will be here.
Yeah.
So come say hi to Rob.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we'll be all over. And then we'll be back in January with our next sermon series.
Which we're going to be looking at Bible basics.
Yep, Bible
and
basics.
This is not your typical how to study the Bible.
No, it'll probably be a little different. Be a little different.
We're going to be talking about the things that make, not that we're special, but the things Mission Ridge does differently than your stereotypical church when we approach Scripture.
Sure.
And why we think these things are important and
things that have changed how we read the Bible.
Yeah, that's a good way to.
And how we approach the Bible and things that we think would be useful for somebody else who might want to do the same thing.
And it doesn't change if you grew up in your typical Protestant church and you had your concordance and
doesn't change anything like that.
Nope.
Just gives it a little more depth.
Yep, that's it.
So we'll be talking about that in January.
All right, I think this podcast is long enough. I got work to do.
Plenty long enough. So we'll just leave her there.
All right, well, thanks for joining us.
We'll see you next time on Footnotes.
You've been listening to Footnotes on the Mission Ridge podcast. For more information about Mission Ridge, please visit our website at missionridge.church. Thanks for tuning in. We hope the rest of your week is straight up hashtag blessed and that you'll join us again next week for more Footnotes.